This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana. Time to take a look at the markets through a slightly different lens, not necessarily purely fundamental or technical, but maybe a little more quantitative and data-driven. Joining me now to do just that is Mark Ainsworth. He is head of data insights and analytics at Schroders, here to talk about where we stand from a quantitative and to a certain extent a qualitative perspective as well. Mark, thanks for being with us today. Let me ask you first if you could explain what data science is and how it's used at Schroders relative to a host of other institutions, whether they're hedge funds or quant funds. How is it used here differently?
Yeah, so my entire career, I've been somebody who helps people make decisions using data. When I started my career, I was called a statistician. I've done lots of coding. We use optimization. In more recent years, I've been called a data scientist. And I think data science is really the collection of tools and skills that are about making correct conclusions from data, you know, using databases, using computers, using statistics. In Schroders, our use through my team, the Data Insights Unit, is helping the investors make their decisions, and in particular, those stock-picking decisions to inform those fundamental theses to invest in companies. So a big part of what the team does is getting insights from what's called alternative data. And of course, you know, every investor is a heavy user of data and always has been. But there's a load of data out there that is too big or too messy to be analyzable with the classic tool that analysts and fund managers have, Excel. And so the tools and techniques that we have, like, you know, complex databases, accessing big data, or statistical methods like AI or machine learning, unlock the potential insights from all sorts of other data sets that can be then fed into making those investment decisions and ultimately giving our investors an information edge.
Okay, could you give me an idea how that works exactly? I mean, when you talk about alternative data, are you talking about things like satellites that provide the number of cars in parking lots, and you crunch that relative to foot traffic when it comes to bricks and mortar retail? What kind of data is so big that it requires these skills?
Yeah, so I think a very commonly used kind of data that my team provides insights from is what we call the digital dust trail from consumers interacting with brands. So every time these days when you're buying something, you use an app, you visit a website, you transact with a card, and every one of those in its own way leaves a trail of information that can provide powerful insight. So you're right, one of the ways that can be used is kind of just another perspective on how much revenue a certain company is taking, and we can give a more timely picture of that sort of information. If you're tracking the number of people visiting a certain website, which is important to a company's operations, you're getting a real picture of how that company's trading much more frequently than the quarterly earnings results. But I think one of the powerful things about that is it's not just about tracking the total. In fact, that's rarely of a high interest to the fundamental investors. Fundamental investors want to understand the companies, understanding how and why they might do well in the future. So the potential for our data to give us insights in a more detailed way, like which bits of the website are more popular, is the increase in custom to this brand from existing customers visiting more often, or is it new customers? Those are the kind of things that really help an analyst to understand how the company is really performing, why it's doing well, does it align with the company's strategy or not? And that then is a very powerful input into their judgment about whether that should be held in a client's portfolio.
So does that mean you can identify the alpha that's delivered by these analyses and strategies?
Exactly. It's about generating the alpha by giving those investors an information edge to really understand the companies they're investing in.
All right, let me ask you about information edge, because that expression has always had kind of a dual connotation. On the one hand, it's viewed as key to being a successful investor. On the other hand, some people assume that there's kind of a dark process. Can you differentiate between what's called a black edge and the type of edge that you provide?
Well, I think a really good example, and it's a very current one, is around coronavirus and COVID-19. So, nobody can turn on the news without seeing a wash of information about cases and mortality and new variants and all sorts of things. And so for the last 10 months, our team have had a part of the team focused on providing insights about coronavirus to our colleagues. And all we're doing is using information that is in public, it's published widely, but what we're doing is making sense of it. We're taking that data and using it to input into mathematical models that try to cut through the noise and really work out what's going on and then communicating those key insights to investors. So certainly when we were first doing that back in March, we built an epidemiological model and used the data published on all the different countries of the world to make sense of what was happening with the virus, what we thought that would mean for government responses and in turn, therefore, for markets and economies. And the feedback I got from some of my analysts was they said they genuinely felt like they had, you know, 2 or 3 weeks lead over the rest of the market in understanding what was happening in terms of the virus and the effect it was having on the world. But we weren't using any data that wasn't literally published and publicly disclosed in every, you know, newspaper of the world. We were just focusing our professional expertise in really making sense of it and distilling the insights based on the questions we were getting from investment colleagues.
Now, here in the United States, it would seem like that would have been of great use to the government as well, as it might have been in the UK, which is both countries of which have kind of botched their ability to understand the progression, the transmissibility, the lethality of the disease. Is there ever a time when that's shared with others besides investors?
No, well, we focus it very much on investors. And I think it's interesting. I often encounter discussion on Twitter and elsewhere where there's public health professionals are very anxious about not trying to make any long-term predictions about things. The people who really know this stuff don't make long predictions. They're very aware that that will then get reported by the press. You know, the population will see what they say and they may change their behavior in a way that is then causes the virus to spread worse. So they're very aware of that risk. Whereas, and then there's lots of pundits who are happy to make, you know, long-term predictions, but they're not really very well informed. So yeah, I think we're in a privileged position where I'm able to we're able to make some sort of long-term predictions, but we can be just really focused on what we think is really true without having been burdened with the fact that policy and public health communication is a big complicated problem, and there's lots of big debates about that, and that actually wouldn't work if there was any possibility that those specific predictions were also public, because it's a global, you know, health catastrophe, and it's you know, needs to be treated responsibly.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Now, what about things like climate change? I mean, and this is something that has certainly more than one variable. I mean, it may be the single most complex question we have with respect to variability, time frames, time sequences, and the like. Any insights that you've gleaned something in the many ways is equally, if not more complex than epidemiology?
Yeah, so the core way my team works is we will answer questions and build tools in response to requests from our investment colleagues. You know, we know data and statistics, they know investments and markets. And so the value comes from working together. And so, you know, there's hundreds, thousands of things we could do with climate change, but we focus on the things that our investment colleagues would value. And I think just to give you a flavor of that, one request we had from our emerging markets colleagues was they were concerned about the impact of climate change on permafrost. There are lots of, you know, where parts of the world have permafrost, like Siberia, you don't lay foundations, you just build a property on the ground because it's rock solid. And clearly climate change is going to fundamentally change where permafrost turns into regular kind of ground. That's going to have a really big impact on the buildings built in those places. So emerging markets colleagues were very concerned about, in particular, some gas production organizations, companies like Gazprom, Rosneft, and what was going to be happening with permafrost. So what we're able to do was take two data sets that are defy analysis with Excel. First of all, the locations of those big gas production facilities that are built on permafrost, and a huge data set we've got. It's got about 20 billion data points in there of global weather data. So this is sort of super granular. You know, is it raining? What's the temperature hour by hour across the whole globe? And we basically combined those two data sets to create a a very precise history of the overall temperature in these places where the gas facilities are built. And we're able to give our investment colleagues a very specific, actionable understanding of which facilities might be at risk from the melting of permafrost and when that might happen. So not only was that a much more granular picture of the degree to which different gas operating companies might suffer that risk and when, but also actually they use that information to actually directly engage with those companies and have a more informed and empowered discussion about what they're doing about climate change.
Yeah, let me follow up on that, because the melting of permafrost, whether it's in Siberia or northern Canada, around the Arctic Circle and what have you, is also said to be a risk insofar as it could release methane. So do you go full circle with this? To the extent that the permafrost melts, it may certainly impact building and the search for natural gas and oil, but may also by extension be another negative as far as climate change is concerned.
Yeah, we don't get into trying to modeling that. Like as with COVID, there are other people out there doing much more expert on the complexities of modeling that. And what we do is lean on that as much as we can. So the fact that we as a team have expertise in mathematical modeling, actually often it's as useful just to identify which of the other people out there who are doing research on those sorts of things are doing that really well and are most worth paying attention to. We haven't yet built a climate model, but if it's something that our investors tell us they would value and it's a gap to be filled, then we've got the capacity to have a go at it for sure.
Finally, with respect to how you do this, and you mentioned AI and machine learning have become extremely important in analyzing data, how much more sophisticated will this get over time?
So I think the trend as it applies in the investment world is that any part of anyone's job which is routine and repetitive, if it feels mechanistic, the developments in AI and machine learning mean it can be mechanized. And I think that's a clear impact in all parts of the world, but certainly in investment, it means if there's something you could imagine asking 100 interns to do for you, you could get a piece of machinery to do with AI technology. And so we're constantly looking for those opportunities, whether that's using natural language processing to extract certain key topics or trends from documents, looking for patterns in price series. If there's some sort of mechanistic bit of anyone's work, it can be mechanized, and we're a big part of trying to do that.
Well, please don't do that with the punditry, because that would leave me without a job. But Mark, I thank you for your time. Appreciate your insights today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Mark Ainsworth, Head of Data Insights and Analytics at Schroders. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks with a new U.S. Lens.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.